Hey guys, Footy Focus Podcast, episode 21. We are recording on Wednesday, the 19th of October. I'm joined by my co-host, Shahan, who's a bit cranky still after the trade period. How are you going?
Hey, Shanika. Yeah, I'm well. Yeah. I don't know if cranky is the right word after, I don't know, 10 days afterwards. Well, less than that. Yeah, finished last week.
Yeah, so I guess, as Port and Roos supporters, there was the biggest talking point in the trade period was Jason Horne-Francis leaving the Roos after 1 year to join Port Adelaide. So I guess what were your initial thoughts about it when the trade request came through and then, as the trade went on?
Yeah, this is probably the second biggest story, maybe third. I don't know. It's probably up there after the Cats winning the premiership, which we congratulate them. this is like Gil McLaughlin during his speech at the draft, where we congratulate the premiers. It's just as important as podcast after the grand final. And then the Clarko racism or Hawthorn racism scandal, which we'll touch on. So this will be a two-part episode. So first part will be essentially Jason Horne-Francis trade, but sort of draft. I mean, trade news, and then the second part will be the Hawthorn stuff. Initial reaction. So this dropped on a Sunday night, didn't it? So,
yeah, before the trade period kicked off.
Yeah, it was a weird one, yeah, because I was busy, like, pretty much that evening, and I checked, I checked Twitter at about 9:30, and, scrolling down, for, like, hours, and it was all about Jason Horne-Francis. So when I saw Cal Toomey's tweet, it was a mix of disappointment, shock, anger, sort of. You feel sort of like you were let into believing something which you would hope was true, like meaning like he resigns and he plays 200 games for the Kangaroos, but when you read that and then you see that what the media speculation was for the whole year, it sort of makes sense. So I think a lot of Roos supporters, me included, were pretty defensive about Horne-Francis's attitude and criticism he faced throughout the year. Sort of took his side more often than not. But after what's happened the last couple of weeks, he sort of sort of feel a little bit cheated, I guess. But end of the day, this is just an entertainment. This is just a game, right? So, these things happen. Like, it's not the first time this even though it's a very rare, circumstance and rare situation. End of the day, the club is greater than any individual player, and North will definitely recover, and it's in the past now. What about yours? What were your reactions, and how did you find out the news?
Yeah, Twitter too. So Cal Toomey's had a massive. I think he broke the Brett Radden sacking news as well. So he's had a massive off season. So definitely surprised, because I thought come next year both SA clubs would be targeting him. I thought we were a chance potentially before Clarko got reappointed. So if Noble stayed, or I don't know, they appointed a coach with less pedigree, I thought he might leave. And I think it makes a bit more sense, because Chris Davies was just talking about us being aggressive, and clearly this was the move that's mooted. And I think Jack Graham was not punted, but that sort of went on the back burner for Jason Horne-Francis. Look, I said this, I think, earlier in the year too. I don't think it's good if he leaves. And I think we can move on to, like, it spins off to a lot of things, right? So the two-year contract for draftees, I think that's way under.
We'll get on to that a little bit later. I think we've got a few more things to cover. But I guess we'll jump into it. So I'll try not to jump around too much and not be too repetitive, but... I think we should analyze this, because this is the perfect podcast to talk about this topic, right? By the way, I think we might need our own individual Twitters after this.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, because I don't want Port to win a game next year, so we get the number one pick. So yeah, we'll start off with was he always going to request a trade back to South Australia? And yeah, sort of whose fault it is, who do we blame? Is it North or Jason or Francis? So as a Roos supporter, without knowing sort of what happens like inside the club, inside the four walls, what I'm sort of, whether it's biased or not, what I'll just blame. I reckon Jason Horne Francis should take almost all the responsibility, like 99% of what's happened. I think it's easy to blame the club. And yeah, you find a lot of media have done that. They're blaming Horne Francis, his character and everything has come under fire as well. But I think people are looking at the club and saying where the Kangaroos are at as a reason, which I think it's extremely unfair. So going back to his draft year, last year, he wanted to go number one. And yeah, we all knew we had the number one pick, and the club even told him before the draft, we're going to take you. He knew the Kangaroos were starting a rebuild, or were just a couple of years into a rebuild. He knew that the coach was only a year in. He knew the first half of last year was terrible and we improved a little bit. And he knows the system is designed so the bottom club gets number one pick and draft goes in reverse ladder order. So to say that, and the bottom place club, where the Kangaroos are at, you know there's not going to be like a stability of like a top four club. There's going to be parts of the club that aren't like ticking along like 100%, like on and off the field. They're still reshaping the playing list off field as well with coaches and the board and everything. President, I think Sonia Hood just became the president this year. So she knew what he was getting into is my point. And his press conference when he signed with Port to like say instability as a reason, I think it's a cop-out. I think, it's just an excuse. So it's just words to sort of soften the blow.
Instability. So if you're going to use the Clarko thing as the instability, right? So Griffin Logue and I think Darcy Tucker have committed to the Roos with this instability, right? And no one else, Cam Zerhard's re-signed. No one else has left, right? Yeah. It's just him.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So from that, I just see that returning to his home state as the main reason. So I know we criticize draftees of saying they don't want to go interstate like Archie Perkins famously did a few years ago. So understand that he wanted to go number one. He's competitive and all that. But I don't think he just gave the club a chance. So, and it's hard for the club to successfully retain him when back of his head, he's like, I'll just do 2 years or 1 year, what it turns out, and then request a trade back to South Australia. And he himself admitted he's not perfect and he admitted he needed to be more professional. So I think if you want to go number one, you're expected to be those things. So even he admitted, he could have done better. So I think, he just didn't give North Melbourne a chance to retain him. And there were also rumours that Port were in his ear. I don't know if they're true or not, but Koshy admitted that they were, we've sort of been working and communicating with Jason and his parents for a little while. So I don't know how long a little while is, but you reckon that's more than the last couple of weeks, or will it go back months potentially to the day he got drafted?
I think you'd be naive to think not just Port, but I think Rankin and Lukosius, as soon as they were drafted, you heard, okay, Port and Crows are going to get them after 2 years, right? And then both of them have re-signed. Rankin's gone back to the Crows, but you'd be naive to think it doesn't happen. It definitely should be outlawed, right? Because when players are in contract, I think that's just not immoral, but it's not right.
It's draft tampering. That's sort of what it. Yeah. It's almost what it is. Like especially, I know managers and clubs need to talk to players when they're coming out of contract, because you have to talk to them. Like in the NRL, they talk to them like they sign with other clubs while they're in, while they're playing for the other team. So
a year old, right?
You know, yeah, you know it happens within contract, but not like a first year player in their first year, in their first few weeks or months of them getting drafted. And there should be like a rule that says you can't talk to them in the first year or 6 months or whatever. So I don't know how they're going to police that, but yeah, I think it's a pretty dangerous. And I don't think it's socially acceptable for clubs to do that if that's what's happened. But yeah. It's not just sport. I reckon it happens. Like Melbourne clubs probably do it all the time to interstate Melbourne or Victorian boys. Yeah, also that stability line, just quickly, yeah. It's just a line. I don't think he actually means it. He's not the most polished media performer, but if he wants to go to a stable club, I don't think Port's probably the like least stable. I mean, least stable as in what Ken Hinckley might be next year.
Yeah.
Like you'd think he's got a 1 year deal. I mean, if you guys have a 5-0-5 start, he's not going to be there next year. So,
that's completely true. Like, yeah, we need to make the grand final for him to get recontracted, essentially. I think Koshy's pretty much said that. And yeah, a bad start, he's gone. Yeah, like Leon Cameron did last season, right? So, I think the stability thing, yeah, the media performer aspect, yeah, he's 18, 19, so you could probably give him a pass for that. But yeah, the unprofessionalism, like the ice bite's not the only one. Like he clipped a GWS player, got, I think, 2 weeks. He was dropped twice for a wooden spoon team, which, you know, the number one draft pick should really be playing every game unless he needs a rest.
I think that comes down to like following team rules, not just his on-field performances.
Yeah.
But I think it feels like he just didn't like Melbourne. I get he's close to his family. I know he's got a little brother or stepbrother, which he's tight with. So, I've always lived at home, so I wouldn't know what it's like to be pulled out of home and moved to a different state. But I think if your dream is to be an NFL footballer and it's a national sport, so you sort of expected to, yeah, it's a national draft as well. So you're expected to fulfill your commitments, if you, especially if you go number one or in the first round or if you get drafted.
That's a thing, right? So he wanted to be number one, but yeah, I think he should have done an Archie Perkins. Chad Wingard did it too. I think GWS wanted him, and he said, "Look, I'm not going to leave Adelaide." He should have done that, right? He should have said, "Look, I'm not going to play anywhere else but Adelaide," and then the Roos probably wouldn't have taken him number one, right? But then, yeah, if you want to be number one but also want to go home, you can't have things both ways. So he's made the wrong call there.
Yeah, like. I mean, him wanting to go number one is what media, what we know, but who knows? Maybe he did tell the Roos that he doesn't want to go, and we just took him anyway because he was our first ever number one pick, and for a bit of PR and everything. And the trade offers we got, maybe they weren't as good as what we valued him as, and we thought we could convince him to stay long term. But that's something we won't know, like, I suppose. Do you think Roos had to have traded him? Do you reckon they could have held on to him for another year?
Nah, I think, yeah, from what Brady Rawlings has said, pretty much they wouldn't have got the best out of him next year. The attitudinal issues would have got worse, professionalism, et cetera, et cetera. So I'll flip it back to you. Were you happy with the outcome? So you'll get, I think he said...
No, I'm not ready to talk about that yet.
Huh?
Are we talking about the trade, the draft, the mega deal?
Yeah.
No, we've still got a little bit more to dissect before we get into that.
But I think you had to trade. I think you had to trade.
I agree. Yeah. I think this season, his first year, he's shown that he's not resilient. And that's including within games, week to week, month to month. So within games, like you hear about him, I don't know, just dropping his head. Not chasing and like tackling the defensive things are what he's known for. So he's not doing any of that. Month to month, he flew off to Adelaide without following the proper rules. So the club sort of made it not seem like a big deal, but maybe it was internally. So he took the easy option leaving. I know I'm being a bit repetitive, but yeah, the Clarko thing as well. So it's like a bit of a smokescreen, like probably driven by management as a way to soften the blow and make it seem like there's a reason. He was also clipped by Zerha on the way out on social media, which is liked by a lot of Roos supporters. So, and what I've sort of heard and read is that a lot of the players were offside with him. So, so maybe his character, maybe his personality wasn't gelling with the club. But yeah, I agree. I reckon we had to trade him this year. So the only silver lining that he requested it after his first year was that he was still in contract. So he gave us some leverage. Whereas if he had waited 12 months, he wouldn't have signed and we would have had less leverage and we probably would have only got like one first round pick rather than the two. So, and it avoids another sort of a circus for next year. So, yeah, I agree with you in that we had to cut him off, cut him loose and sort of, start again.
Yeah, I think there was definitely talk if Noble stayed, he would have left. Right? I don't think the relationship there was that great. But then when Clarko committed, that talk got shut down essentially. So I thought he was going to stay at least another year, give Clarko a chance. So do you think if Clarko had already started and there wasn't this step down from the role, this investigation, do you think he sticks around for another year?
I like to think Clarko being there or not being there wouldn't have made a difference. Because okay. I don't think it should. Like, if he's only going to stay here for another year, if Clarko's here, then what's the point? Like, you'd want him to be a 200 gamer for the Kangaroos.
Regardless,
we're not going to put 2 years development into this guy and have him leave after his mandatory contract finishes. You'd rather put those 22 games into a new draftee. I think Brady, and the team did the right thing for sure. What about for Port? So you bring in this high-profile player who's played 17 games, been suspended, dropped a couple of times. He's definitely clickbait, and there's going to be a lot of media exposure and everything. Do you reckon there'll be more expectation on him now? And he's in that bubble of that two-team town.
Yeah, he'll definitely cop a bit more, especially in the two-team town and the fact that he's left in contract. So every bad game will be scrutinised. Every good game of, the two draftees that the Roos select, picks two and three, then, he'll get scrutinised further. But I think with him, I think you're probably only going to get the best out of him in Adelaide. So whether that's with the Crows or Port. Now, he's not expected to be, the number one midfielder. That's, Rosie, Butters, Vogue. So he doesn't come in as being, he won't get tagged. He won't come in as being tagged. He won't be targeted like that. The pressure is off him from that regard. But, he'd be naive. He'll probably be the most, I think we're talking about a Port Roos round one fixture, right? And that's because of him. So it's a bit like the Treloar Collingwood Bulldogs, I think, two seasons ago. So, he'll be the most scrutinised player in the AFL, probably, from round one. The only thing to shut that up is to perform, right?
Yeah, like he wasn't going to get tagged with that. Like, he had a couple of, I know our midfield isn't as deep, but he had a couple of players you'd probably tag before him anyway. What I was going to say, there'll definitely be a lot of pressure on him. And, not only Roos players. I think the whole AFL community is offside with him now. Or most of it anyway, not the whole AFL supporter base. But, it's just his character and, everyone feels sort of sorry for the Roos and what he's done. So he's going to have that Nathan Buckley sort of aura around him, like the player that everyone loves to hate. So. That's what comes with his. You live and die by your sword, right? So if he makes his decision, then he's got to live with some boos. Like I'll probably boo him for the rest of all the Kangaroos for that late game for sure. So back to what it says about the club and club and Jason. So he sort of, I reckon, compromised the integrity of the system. Like because we know the draft works in reverse ladder order, and it's there to give all clubs a shot at winning a flag. So when the number one pick requests a trade back after his first year, because we're going to get less. I mean, we've got a couple of first round picks, but it's we'd lose an year of development. So it sort of sets us back a little bit. And if we have another year where we win, like we finish bottom two, win a couple of games, then I reckon the Kangaroos are within our rights again to apply for draft concessions or a special assistance. And David King has this view as well. Do you think that's fair or is it a bit over the top?
No, I don't think it's over the top if it's like what you got this season. So you essentially got Griffin Logan, Darcy Tucker, right, from all these draft concessions?
Yeah, I thought that was a bit unders, but I'm happy we got Griffin. Yeah, essentially, yes, a second round and a third round.
Yeah, I'd be happy with that. Another season, I wouldn't want to, another, like, in 24 months' time to ask for another one. But, yeah, I think 2 years of draft concessions is more than reasonable. But I think, didn't Tom Boyd start this, though? Because he left, he was a pick one, and he left after a season two for that seven-year, $7 million contract with the Dogs. So, yeah, I think him and Jason Orr-France are the two players that are left in contract.
I don't know. Did the Ryan Griffin trade request come in first, or did it was the Tom Boyd one first? Can't remember.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was a Tom Boyd first, and then I think the GWS would have only they needed a player, right? And then Griffin, I think, was out of favour with I think McCartney who'd left at the time, so he was going to go anyway. So they got some kind of currency for him, but. Yeah, Tom Boyd, I think that request came through first. But
yeah, you're right. Yeah, Tom Boyd was the last number one draft pick to leave after his first year. So it rarely happens, and yeah, it might not happen again for another 10 years, but it probably will happen. So yeah, I think at the end of the day, it sort of comes down to the person. And yeah, Jason's, he's just shown that his character was not what it seemed. So he lacked that professionalism, that loyalty, which is just bad luck, I guess. It's just bad luck we finished bottom of the ladder the year that the best player in the draft was a father and son to another team, and the second best player happened to be from South Australia, who had strong family ties. I mean, even if the Crows and Port were like bottom four teams and pretty average teams, I reckon they'd still want to go back. Like, it's not because say the Kangaroos were Hawthorn, who's like traditionally been a really strong club. I reckon he would have, and Hawthorn unknown to like, even if you're rebuilding, they're going to shoot back up the ladder soon. He'd still request a trade to go back to one of you guys. And over the last decade or so, number one draft picks have been pretty loyal. So a few examples, Bryce Gibbs, he went to Blues when they were a basket case. He had a few shocking years. He stayed with them for 11 years. Eventually, he did get traded, but he gave him good service. And that's what I would have asked or would have liked from Orn Francis. 5 or 6 years of good service, get us back into finals, maybe winning a final or two. Do what Dangerfield did and then sort of...
I think he would have stayed for the two plus probably two more contracts. He stayed for three, right? He only left when he became a free agent, right? After the 8 year or 7 year period.
Yeah, he was a free agent. So it was like, between 7 or 8 years.
To get to your free agent.
And Chris Judd did similarly. He wanted to come home, but he gave good service. Jack Chengrove is another one, a South Australian boy who went to Melbourne, did 7 years there. David Swallow is probably the most famous example. From WA, Gold Coast, offers to leave, I think, but still with him, captained the club. Lockie Whitfield, another one who stayed through the hard times of Greater Western Sydney. And more recently, Raoul and Anderson. Mm-hmm. They've signed contracts and they're still up there at the Gold Coast, even though they've been pretty shit. So, those players, I think, shown a lot of character and loyalty to their clubs. And the people that invested high draft picks and time into them. So, and North, I don't think, are as worse than any of those clubs at that stage, especially with Clarko coming in. So, just another example of how Orn Francis took the easy road. A couple of other things to defend North. So I heard Orn Francis declined to live with a host family. which is like normal for draftees to live with the host family, show them the road, interstate. So he declined to do that, and he moved in with Cal Coleman Jones, who later on like didn't want to live with him or something. And then he moved in with Paul Curtis. North Melbourne also has a good player retention record. So recent players to leave were Ben Brown, Higgins, and Tarrant, but they were at different stages in their career, and we were happy to trade them out. And yeah, the last young player to sort of leave was Levi Greenwood. Would have been like 7-8 years ago, because of midfield depth, and he was from South Australia too, and he went to the Pies. So I don't think young players leave the club. Also, Scott Taylor and Zerha all re-signed as well. So like you said before, he was the only one to request a trade, even after having such a disastrous 2 years. A bit of a media beat-up to say that there's an exodus or players wanting out. Tom Powell's the other one, who's from South Australia, and he signed a two-year extension. So, and he's also, taken the opportunity to study at Melbourne Uni. So, he's mature enough to do something good while he's in a probably the best city in Australia. Whereas, Horne Francis is sort of the black sheep almost. He was in a bit of an outsider. Tarrant Thomas, a bit of noise about him, but it looks like he's staying. But yeah, those are just a few reasons why I'm sort of defending the club and but putting the blame sort of on Francis.
Fair enough. And then we touched on it before about the two-year contract for draftees. So what's your take on it? Do you think it should be 2 years or should be extended? Or
I think it sort of depends on where they're picked. So I'd sort of give first-round picks maybe 2 years.
2 years?
2 years plus another year, maybe 3 years in total. Yeah. But I'd make the third year that they can negotiate their salary. This is pretty unfair if Nick Daigle gets paid the same as Horne Francis in his third year. He should be earning a lot more. So I know that's what the sticking point might be. It's a bit, you don't want to give him all 3 or 4 years. Like sometimes a lot of second rounders got delisted this year. Like Caleb Poulter, I think, was one of them from the Pies. So sometimes 2 years is enough to know if you're going to make it or not. So, and especially for those later picks. So it makes sense to give the first round an extra year. And I'll be okay with players still requesting trades within those years, but it's a club that's holding them a bit more leverage. If they can't get a deal they like the first time around, the first year, you can hold them for another 12 months and still have pretty good leverage. So there's a bit of a fine line there, but... I think more time would be needed. What about you?
Yeah, I think it should be four.
Four for all draftees?
No, not all. I'd extend it to second rounders, to be honest, as well. Because I think it's like the whole point is equalization, right? So every team technically wins a premiership every 18 years, and that's not going to happen. But for equalization, draftees have to stay for two contracts. So I'm saying three plus, say another two. So they don't all necessarily need to do a Daniel Field and stay till they hit free agency at 7 or 8 years, but there's got to be exceptions, right? So if there's a family member illness or a death or something like that, then they can leave before. Now, to my knowledge, that's not the case with Horne Francis, so that wouldn't apply to him, but there are exceptions like that. Say if a mum passes away or your dad gets cancer or something like that, then you should be free to leave. I think that happened to Dane Beams as well when he went up to Brisbane, I think for his dad. But I think that should be the case. And it's like I said throughout the year, it's shocking if he leaves before the 2 years and he's left after one. So
yeah, it's a tricky one because it's not just based on the player, and you can't have black and white. I mean, there's no harsh line to say someone has to die or have to get sick to move out. I was listening to Kinnear Beetson, the Sydney Swans recruiter. Yeah, he said Dawson, who went to Adelaide last year, he was okay with Sydney. He was happy to be there, but his girlfriend wanted to go back. So it was her being homesick that drove the trade, not Dawson himself. So what do you do then? It's pretty hard. Like, in the end of the day, like, family is probably more important. And yeah, maybe Horne Francis was sort of really missing his dad and brother. So, the club has to, like, do what's best. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't want to be, like, one of those clubs that, it's our way or the highway sort of thing. You'd want to, do the right thing and make it an attractive place to come. Like, you're working with people, right? So.
Yeah, I mean, the Dawson wouldn't be an exception under my take, like, the girlfriend's homesick. Horne Francis has a younger sibling, or, you know, he's super close to his mum and stepdad. That wouldn't qualify as an exception. It's got to be a bit more, otherwise everyone can leave, right? Because everyone would have situations like that, every interstate player, right? A girlfriend or a wife or mum or dad or something like that. So,
yeah. I think we're okay with players leaving. I reckon it's just a leverage that you give the club that has them a bit more. That's what the 4 years or 3 years does. It gives them, instead of Port maybe coughing, or instead of Adelaide coughing up late picks or whatever, they might have to give a bit more. But hopefully it is something the AFL does, because I think, especially with the interstate clubs, and even if Tassie comes in a few years, they're going to have a real problem. These clubs are just feeder clubs for the bigger Victorian-based club, really.
And on the mega trade, so do you think you guys got back enough for Jason?
Yeah, we won't go through what went where, but I think the original offer was Port's pick 8 and your future first rounder.
It got knocked back
by that. Yeah, I think that had to get knocked back. I think I hate it when the media says, oh, he's worth 2 first rounders, or like 1 first rounder or a second rounder. Like, there's almost 20 picks between first rounders. Like, it can be like a top end first rounder or like a late first rounder. So, firstly, I think the way media calls a first rounder, you got to break it down into like parts of the draft. So getting 2 mid first rounders, I don't think it was going to cut it, and it didn't. So the only way, I think, Brady must have told, we need a top 5 pick, ideally like a top.
Yeah.
So, and then that's when all these other teams got involved.
West Coast and GWS.
Yeah. So I think it worked out sort of well for us because of the Rioli thing and how the top end of the draft were just Victorian. So West Coast slid back a bit, clearly because there's a flight risk. They say that's not the reason, but I reckon it's pretty obvious. And when our pick 1 was up for grabs, I reckon that made it even better. So, yeah, getting pick 2, I think, was good. Ideally, I would have wanted something at the end, your future first, but most likely around in the middle of the draft, first round again, and then something more, a little bit more like a late first rounder would have been ideal. So if we include the pick 1 deal, we sort of did get that, but then that just meant sliding from pick 1 to pick 3 for nothing. So at the end of it all, I think, and when you digest it, it's not bad, purely because pick 1 from last year got converted into pick 2 this year, and then another first rounder. Ideally, would have liked something else around that pick 15 to 22, 23 range.
But a player.
A player?
Yeah, because we didn't have to give up a player. We gave up draft picks, essentially.
Yeah, so I reckon Port definitely won the trade. I reckon, you just gave up a bunch of draft picks. So you sort of almost sold your farm for Rioli and Horne Francis. But not giving up, retaining all your young players, I reckon, was a big positive. I reckon Greater Western Sydney lost just because they had to pay a bit overs to get pick 1 to get Cadman. And I think North and West Coast did okay. Maybe a little bit unders. I don't think Rioli was worth what West Coast wanted. I think he's 28 Saturday next year. So
yeah, well, I think they were asking for Georgiadis or Houston, which was never going to happen. I think Ruse had more leverage to demand a player. So I think the fair trade probably would have been throw in a Sin or a Bergman. I think you mentioned that in the notes too. So Rosie or Butters would have been off limits. That would have been a bit too much. But I think one of those two, Sins, I think, pick 12 from last year, we moved up a bunch of spots to get him. So that would have been, I think that would have made it a bit more fair on North. And that's what I didn't like about it. I don't think you were compensated enough.
Maybe that just speaks to how desperate we were to get rid of Colin Francis, to be honest. But I reckon Sin might have been a bit of a push because you paid up an extra second round to get Sin. Bergman would have been probably more ideal. Especially because he gets to play with his brother at the Roos. No, I'm just kidding. They're not related. Miller Bergman and Miles Bergman. Someone like that who was a late round pick. I think he got a Rising Star nomination, didn't he? He's clearly talented. Overall, I think, it was probably one of the biggest trades ever. So it's good to be a part of it. I guess a lot will depend on where Port finish next year. Which we might as well just jump into that now. So I'd be death riding Port for sure next year. I think one of the footy forums has a whole thread dedicated to that. So hoping Port finish bottom six, so it gives us two top five picks. I hope Mackay stays. If he leaves, then I reckon we can potentially get three top five picks. Hopefully we sign Mackay onto a long-term deal. Harley Reid looks like a superstar, but who knows, a lot can happen in 12 months. Where do you think Port will realistically finish?
My expectation is with the list we have top four, I think the only thing we're missing is probably another key back, which we touch on that a bit later. Maybe Asava would have helped with that. They're a bit too short, but I think everywhere else on the ground, we're not lacking for anything. So it really should be a top four expectation. So I don't think you're going to get your wish for that pick, but I did say they come into this year and we start off 0-5. So if that happens, coach goes, then the bottom might fall under. And then, but look, I think we're happy to give up the first round picks because I think we've picked, 7 first rounders in the last 3 or 4 draft, which I think second or third most. So I think that's why we're happy to let go of those first round picks, which it's pretty much all in. All the chips in the middle and go for that flag. But, just a key back we're missing. So I think it'll be top four, to be honest.
Yeah, that's a big call. A lot of clubs sort of topped up this trade period. So I think it just depends on your depth, I think. If you cop a couple of bad injuries and could a bit of pressure mounting on. We might touch on the draft a bit later, but I think Carlton Murek and Harry Sheezel, the player that I've wanted all year, might be one of our picks. And George Wardlaw, who is another sort of Horn Francis sort of type of player. So, it should be, I think we should avoid drafting interstate players. With those really high-end picks. And, just put development into the players we get with picks 2 and 3.
Who's the other one? Is Rawling, I think, said there's 3 about even. So she's a Wardlaw. Who's the other one?
I don't know who the other one is. We don't even know if it's she's a Wardlaw.
Yeah.
But Sardis, the other.
Sardis, that's the other one. Yeah.
Sardis could be one. Cadman might be the other one. They don't give too much away, but,
Yeah.
We might sort of pause the podcast.